Way to go. Way to do that. All right. Man, I feel like we hadn't done the Wednesday night in a while. Yeah. Right? That's right. You're not replaceable. All right, Psalm 11 is where we are. We're going to Psalms. And just like your hymnal, in the songs are arranged in your hymnal, not according to chronology, because that doesn't really matter. They're arranged according to thoughts and themes. And Psalms is like that. And there's five books of Psalms, the 850 total Psalms. The first book goes from Psalm 1 to Psalm 41. And the theme in the first book is trust, really trusting the Lord. And that may not sound like a, you know, all that revolutionary or big deal to us, but it is a big deal to the nation of Israel, because this is something David is trying to instruct the nation on. Through these songs and prayers, and they are prayers as well, just like a lot of our hymns, they're prayers as well. And so, trusting the Lord, as opposed to relying on your Jewishness, that's kind of the idea. It became such a horrific problem that by the time Jesus Christ shows up, he says some pretty harsh things to people who just talk about how Jewish they are. And then Paul has to get on to people in Galatia and churches in Galatia. So God's always been after faith and trust. And so this is no different. And that, if you ever had this experience, I actually had this experience today, talking to somebody, and they clearly have had some pretty bad things go on in their lives, in their life, and recently. And, you know, you may feel like you want to help in some way, but you find that they're actually instructing you in how to go through a process that is, that you think, okay, well, they're not as spiritual or whatever. But as you listen to them talk, they're actually more of a blessing than you thought they would be. And I kind of had that experience today. I'm listening to a fella talk and talk about his life and talk about how grateful he is to the Lord and talk about how thankful he is. And he's gone through some horrible things. And it was just very instructive to listen to. And when I read the Psalms, David is like that. David is in this position where so much of David's life is just being hunted down. And someone mentioned that after Sunday school, because we've gone through 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. And as you guys know that are in Sunday school, David has more of his life recorded than almost any other character or person in the Bible other than Jesus Christ. There's more about David than really anybody else. And so much of his life is just being hunted, either hunted by Saul, or then hunted by his own son, or other armies. I mean, it's just a lot of David on the run, and periodically, you know, he takes the throne, goes to Hebron for 7 years, and then moves the throne to Jerusalem, moves the ark to Jerusalem. And then immediately goes on the run again from Absalom. And so I say that because while he's on the run, he's the guy that's also giving the instruction to people who aren't on the run and telling them how to live a life that is grateful and good and hopeful while being harassed and being persecuted. And so he says this, And it's really just an encouragement to trust the Lord. It's pretty simple. But Psalm 11, I'll read the whole thing to you. And really, there's three parts to it. There's the encouragement from probably friends of his that would say, you know, this situation is, it looks like this is happening, and this is so bad, and this is terrible. And then David's response in the psalm, where he encourages him to trust the Lord. The Lord sees all these things, and he's aware of what's going on. And so David isn't going to lose necessarily sleep over this, even though maybe his friends might or people acquainted with him might. And so he's in the position of teacher. He's in the position of instructor. And this is what he is a lot of the times in Psalms. He's in the position of instructor, where he is in the midst of a terrible situation and all the while talking about how grateful he is and how much he's been blessed and how much he's been taken care of and how good the Lord is in his life and things like that. And so Psalm 11, let's read this. In the Lord put I my trust. How say ye to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? For lo, the wicked bend their bow, they make ready their arrow upon the string, that they may privily shoot at the upright in heart. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. Now, if just to put a little bit of context to this, or a little bit of arrangement to this, verses 1 through 3 are kind of the questions. They're sort of the warnings to David from his friends. Like, there's, you know, be warned, David, be careful, this is going on. Starting in verse 4, it's kind of David's response to all that. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. The Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence his soul hateth. Upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, horrible tempests, and this shall be the portion of their cup. For the righteous Lord loveth righteousness, and his countenance doth behold the upright. And this is, again, I want you to start paying attention to some of the way the Lord frames his economy and his kingdom is righteousness and wickedness, or good and evil. And this is the way he sees things. This is the way he frames life. It's not the way we may frame it with race or, you know, gender or whatever like that. Those are real things, but the Lord frames life in the context of wicked and righteous and good and evil and things like that. And so this is what David highlights in all of this. He highlights that God is for the upright. God is looking at the upright. He's looking at the righteous because he loves righteousness. This is the gold standard in God's economy, is righteousness. And the wicked don't understand that. They don't care about that. And consequently, they're in all facets of their life opposed to God in real ways. And so verses 1 through 3, this will be real, should be real simple, because the message is pretty simple. It's David instructing. He's being warned, and then he kind of turns it around and says, this is my view of God. This is where I'm at. I understand you guys are afraid, but this is where I'm at on this. So verses 1 through 3, he starts the whole thing off, in the Lord put I my trust. And this is, again, the theme for the first 41 chapters of Psalms. It's about trusting the Lord. And what does that mean, to trust the Lord? What does that look like in someone's life? How is that played out? And it's explained many times over in the Psalms. It's explained many times over in Proverbs and other places in the Bible. But the first 41 Psalms follow that theme, and they track that theme of trusting the Lord. And this is the thing that connects people to God, is trusting the Lord. Just like this is how relationships are established and made. So he says, in the Lord put I my trust. That's his statement. Now, how are you going to tell me to run away? How are you going to tell me to essentially run away to the mountain? You know, the wicked bend their bow. This is their warning. The wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow upon the string, that they may privily shoot at the upright in heart. So David, be warned. These people, they make these anonymous attacks. They'll be... these arrows will come out of nowhere. People are coming from out of nowhere to hurt you. And then they kind of warn David, you know, if the lights go out in Israel, if you die, the lights go out in Israel. Foundations be destroyed. What can the righteous do? And it's a pretty good argument, but it's fear. It's just fear is what it is. And so David responds to it. So the first three verses, David's going to meet fear with faith. He hears them, but he starts the whole thing off, I trust the Lord. Remember, this is the theme. And this is in the form of, in this psalm, the form of a conversation. The questions from the fearful friends trying to give David advice. If the foundations be destroyed, David, what are we going to do? What do the righteous do? Well, I mean, if you die, if the lights go out in Israel, then what? It's kind of like what they said in Samuel when David was starting to get old and he couldn't fight anymore. And there was a real risk that he was going to die in battle until one of the men stepped up and saved him and then told him, look, you can't do this anymore. You cannot do this anymore. You can't fight like this anymore. And so that was a physical infirmity, and it was just a limitation that he had at that time. But at this time, it's not that way yet. And so they say, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And that's sort of, someone taking counsel of their fears. So David's going to meet this fear now with faith. He says, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. The Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. That's pretty strong language. Upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, and a horrible tempest, and this shall be the portion of their cup. So David frames the thing exactly like the Lord frames it. It's wickedness and righteousness. It's good and evil. And so God is on the side of the righteous because God is righteous. He loves righteousness. That's right. It's doing right. And so this is the side that the righteous judge of the whole earth is on. Shall not the judge of the whole earth do right? And so David appeals to that, and he's going to appeal to that not only in this psalm, but a lot of other psalms where he talks about he has chosen good things. He's chosen things in his life, and he's done that because that is his trust in God. This is how he's trusted the Lord, and he expects the Lord to be a rewarder of those things. A few notes about all of this. He talks about the eyes of the Lord. This is something that is the Lord is described in kind of personal terms or personable terms, anamorphism, something like that, where the Lord is said to have eyes that see all over the world and they try men. And so the eyes of the Lord try men's hearts. There's several things that it reminded me of in the Bible. You go back to Genesis, and a man named Noah, he finds grace in the sight of the Lord. So God sees Noah, and he sees his faith, and he sees his walk with the Lord, and Noah finds grace in the sight of the Lord, or in the eyes of the Lord. That's said many times about many people. That in the eyes of the Lord, this man is good or this man is evil. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did good in the sight of the Lord. And so the eyes of the Lord are the trial. This is what God is watching. He watches men and he sees what they do. He doesn't make them do anything. He sees what they do and he tries their activities. He looks at the heart of men. This is something that men can't really do. To the best of our ability, you can see what people do in their lives, and that's about what you can see. But the Lord, he tries the heart, and a lot of times he tries the heart just with time and behavior and watching, kind of like the Proverbs said, that a child is even known by what he does. And so you just watch the behavior, and so the Lord looks at the heart, and this is what he's after. This is what he's trying to shape into something good and something right. You go all the way to Revelation, the end of the Bible, and Jesus Christ is described as having eyes of flaming fire. And it's not a physical description of, you know, literal fire coming out of his eyes. It's the same kind of description you've read in Psalms and some of the prophets about the trial in the eyes of God and how he tries men's hearts and he tries people's lives. And so God's economy, again, is righteousness versus wickedness. And this is what he sees. This is what he observes. This is the important thing in people's lives that he's watching. Like I said, Noah finds grace in the sight of the Lord. Sometimes in the kings, you've got some men who are said to do right in the sight of the Lord, some men who are said to do wicked in the sight of the Lord, but it's the Lord's eyes that are the trial. This is the thing that says good or evil. This is the thing that says wicked or righteous. And so the Lord sees all, and David says that. The Lord's in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold. His eyelids try the children of men. That's verse 4. Verse 5, the Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. And so God is opposed to certain things. He has an opinion about evil. He has an opinion about violence. He has an opinion about just anger and wrath without cause. He has an opinion about these things. Not that these emotions are bad in themselves, but so many times with people, they're just misplaced and they're perverted into things that they're not supposed to be. This is what Jesus Christ would say. If you're angry with a brother without a cause, that's a perversion of this emotion. You've perverted this thing and you've turned it into something it shouldn't be. There's appropriate times to be angry. But if you're angry without a cause, that's inappropriate. It's a perversion. And then wrath comes out of that, and malice and bitterness and hatred and things like that. And so David says, the Lord, He hates the soul that loves violence. And then the judgment of the wicked, upon the wicked he shall rain, snares, is verse 6. Fire, brimstone, and horrible tempest, this shall be the portion of their cup. This is what they're headed towards. This is the end. There's no reward for this activity. There's no reward for this behavior. There's no reward for the wicked. There's no reward. There's no future in it. The only future is in righteousness. And the Proverbs would say something similar. The Proverbs, Solomon would say in the Proverbs that in the day of judgment, how did he say that? Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. That's the economy. That's God's economy. That's God's kingdom. That's his principles at work. And so David understands it. Then the trial is about, is this thing righteous or is this thing wicked? The trial is about, is this thing good or is this thing evil? And when it's been determined what it is, as a person, when it's been determined what it is, there is a course now. There's a judgment set. And so the Lord sees all. David understands that. And this is David's answer to the friends who are probably trying to give good advice to him, trying to help him. But they don't have the same relationship to God that David does. And so David becomes a teacher and he instructs. He says, God sees these things. God watches. God tries the hearts of men. As far as my heart is going to be, David will say it in other Psalms, you know, I'm going to keep my heart the way it needs to be. In spite of all these other things that are going on, in spite of all the hatred that's around me, in spite of all the wrath and bitterness that's around me, I'm going to keep my heart. And then lastly, David characterizes God, the God that he trusts in. For the righteous Lord loveth righteousness. Verse 7. His countenance, there it is, that's what he's looking on, doth behold the upright. This is something that goes all the way back to Genesis again. These themes go all the way, they're all through the Bible. The character of God. Abraham had said it originally, shall not the judge of the whole earth do right? Shall not the judge of the whole earth do right? This is the way God judges things. You would notice how many times righteousness is really the like I said earlier, the gold standard in God's kingdom from the Proverbs, from Genesis to Revelation. I mean, from Genesis you get in Proverbs, right? righteousness, righteousness, righteousness versus wickedness, wickedness, wickedness. They're set at odds with each other. And then you got the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus talks about righteousness and righteousness, that except your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees. Righteousness that is actual righteousness, not a show of righteousness. He makes those comparisons, where some people make righteousness an act or a production. And Jesus Christ says, that's not what we're after. I'm after actual righteousness, where people work righteousness and they do right. Not where they pretend, or not where they make long prayers for as a pretense. Not where they pretend to be something they're not. And so David gets it. He understands God is the righteous God. God is the thing. And again, it may not sound like a big deal to say that this is God's economy. But if you put yourself in this position and you're a Jewish person, who their nation is built on the promise of God, the whole nation is really going to revolve around the Messiah. This is the whole thing. And you believe that you are something with God because of the way you were born. This is so counter to that. And this is what the New Testament really starts to explain, is this is the relationship to God. The relationship is spiritual. It's righteousness. It's goodness. This is the relationship to God. Not it's not biology. It's not DNA. God doesn't have DNA. God is a spirit. He doesn't have DNA. Until Jesus Christ shows up, who is God manifest in the flesh. But that's Jesus Christ doesn't have any physical children or anything like that. So this is we're dealing with spiritual matters here. Just like Jesus Christ told Nicodemus, it's a spiritual thing. You got to be born of the Spirit. And David gets it. He seems to get it. And so he writes all these psalms. They're prayers, they're songs, they're instructions to people who are not really in his position. But he finds himself in these horrible positions a lot of times, yet trusting God while people around him have these questions about God, or they have this animosity that seems justified towards people that hate David, and they want to get back at these people. And David's kind of like, hold your horses. It's okay, God. God is going to sort this stuff out. He's the judge. He'll handle these things. And so David's sort of the restraining factor in all of that. And he is that a lot of times in the Psalms. And so this is David's kind of encouragement to trust the Lord. It's a real simple 7 verses here. David meets fear with faith. He explains that the Lord sees all. And he praises really the character of God as God who loves righteousness. And this is what makes God good. He's a good God. So that is Psalm 11, and hope it's helpful. Let's pray, and we'll take some prayer requests.